This morning we're going to be talking about power. I invite you to consider, what is it that gives you a feeling of power? I have a few examples that might help you grease the wheels of your thinking a little bit. Money, status, catching something as it's falling, catching something instantly as it's falling. That's power. Calling your dog and he actually comes. That's power. For some of you, not myself, but I know of one person who might say, exotic butters give you a feeling of power. For some of you who are students here in the room, maybe the teacher using your work as an example, except when it becomes an example of what not to do. There goes all of your power. How about any of you? Are there things that you can think of that give you a feeling of power? Knowledge. I might say sometimes driving through a string of green lights makes me feel very powerful. Or one of my kids saying in response to something I've asked them to do, saying, sure, Mom, I'm happy to do that. I think, wow, that's power. Or some of you know, many of you don't, I'm taking a kickboxing class. Boy, and there are times when I have a chance to hit that punching bag really, really hard. That makes me feel very powerful. On a more serious note, but maybe a little more far-fetched, if someone were to come up to me and say, boy, Deb, you know that sermon you preached a year ago? That changed my life. I would feel pretty powerful. Any other thoughts? I invite you to continue to think about that. We don't talk much about power, but we probably should, because it's real and it affects us and it affects others. It affects everyone. We use power. Sometimes we give away power. Sometimes we have power over other people. Sometimes people have power over us. Sometimes we talk about power dynamics at work, in our families, in other relationships, in politics. Sometimes we might feel powerful, if only for a moment and if only for a silly reason. Sometimes we feel powerless, which is very hard. Sometimes power, whether it's our own, I think especially our own, is something that we're aware of. And sometimes we're not. But power, who has it? Who doesn't have it? When it's exercised, how it's exercised, affects all of us all the time. Whether we're aware of it or not, the presence and the absence of power is a primary factor in how we all live our lives. It's a primary factor in how we relate to one another. And I don't mean just we who are gathered here this morning, or we who live in Los Alamos County, or we who are Americans, but we as in all created beings on the planet. Power is a primary factor in how we live our lives and how we interact and relate with one another. And at least in my experiences and in my circles, we don't talk about it nearly enough. Some of you will recall that I was away for a week in June participating in something called the Nolau Leadership Institute. And this is a year-long leadership training program sponsored by a UCC-related organization called the Council for Health and Human Service Ministries. So there were 22 of us all together, 17 participants from all over the country, and 5 facilitators, staff members, and we came from a variety of settings. It wasn't just pastors or just from churches. It was a variety of professional settings. And we talked about a variety of topics during our time together, ranging from servant leadership, faith-based leadership, embodied leadership, social justice and leadership, all kinds of different things in the 4.5 days we were together. During one of the days in particular, we talked about power. And it was eye-opening and thought-provoking. And it was hard. and it was good. There's no way that I can share very much of what we talked about this morning with you with regard to power, although I hope to continue to find ways to engage with you on this topic and other ones that we explored at the retreat. But there's one piece of the conversation that we had that I'd like to share with you, and it's one of the slides that the presenter shared with us. And I know that's hard to see, so I'm going to walk you through it. The first column is titled Dimensions of Diversity, and it has the following categories down the side: age, race, ethnicity, sexual and affectional orientation, physical and mental ability, religion, socioeconomic status, education, gender identity, and citizenship status. And we could continue. There are more categories we could add, but these are the ones that we were talking about. The next column, if you can see that, lists the characteristics of people in those categories who, in our country in particular, and probably largely in Western society, are considered better than others, more desirable. It says up at the top, more desirable, more valuable, and who therefore have more power. In the age category, it's middle-aged. Race, sure we could all guess, white. Ethnicity, Western European. Sexual or affectional orientation, heterosexual. Physical and mental ability, able-bodied and able-minded. Religion, yay! Just kidding, Christian. Socioeconomic status, wealthy or upper middle class. Education, college educated. Gender identity, men, and particularly cisgender men, which means that you are of the same gender that you were born with. If you were born as a boy, you growing up as a boy and a man. Citizenship status, citizen by birth. The column after that, as you can see or would guess, which is entitled Down, lists the characteristics of people who are considered less than others, less desirable, less valuable, and who therefore have less power, and often far less power. So age, the very young and the very old. Race, people of color, or BIPOC, if you're not familiar with that, that stands for Black, Indigenous, People of Color. It's a broader category. Ethnicity, all others that are not Western European. Sexual or affectional orientation, bisexual, gay, lesbian, etc. Physical and mental ability, physical or mental disability, or neurodivergent. That's a phrase. There's neurotypical, there's neurodivergent. An example of that would be someone on the autism spectrum. Different kinds of mental abilities. Religion, all others that are not Christian. Socioeconomic status, lower middle class or poor. Education, high school or less. Gender identity, women or transgendered people. Citizenship status, naturalized citizen by birth, work visa holders, or undocumented persons. So those are the categories that perceived to diminish people's value and therefore the power that they have. Now, I suspect that most of us who are here this morning, if not all of us, can claim membership in quite a few of those categories in the second column, in the up column. And the greater the number of categories in which we find ourselves, the greater our power, whether we realize it or not, whether we claim it or not, whether we use it for good or not. The greater the number of those categories in that second column in which we find ourselves, the more power we hold, especially in this country. And the greater the number of categories in the third column, the down column, in which someone finds themselves, of course, the smaller their power, the less desirable they are considered, the less valuable they are considered, the less power they have access to. So what the heck does this have to do with any of our scriptures? You might argue that it's related to the gospel passage for today with its talk of places of honor and the lower places, places of disgrace, and exalting yourself versus humbling yourselves. And I suspect it is related to that. But we're going to look for just a few moments, actually, at the Hebrews passage, the first part of the Hebrews passage. We're going to look at the part that starts with, let mutual love continue. And I'm going to read a few of those verses again. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them, those who are being tortured as though you yourselves were being tortured. Let marriage be held in honor by all, and let the marriage bed be kept undefiled, for God will judge fornicators and adulterers. Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, for God has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. So what does any of that have to do with our conversation about power? Well, it seems to me that in those words, the author of this letter, who is believed to be Paul, was encouraging followers of Jesus to live with behaviors that would upset the normal power dynamic and power distribution. Let mutual love continue, he says. Mutual love, that's love for family, love for brothers and sisters, love that is not hierarchical, not love that has to be earned, not love that only goes in one direction, not love that's based on external qualifications like education or wealth, or inherent characteristics like race or gender, but mutual love, love for one another just because, as equals. Love that goes both ways and works for both parties or for the good of all. Love that is freely given and unconditional. That was not the norm then, and I dare say it's not the norm now. So let mutual love continue. And then he says, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. A stranger in those days would have been an outsider, someone who didn't belong, someone who was from a different place, who maybe spoke a different language, whose cultural practices and traditions were different, someone whose family was far away, someone for whom it might have been difficult to find a safe place to stay, someone who, given all of those circumstances, when they found themselves in the midst of a Jewish community, would have had very little power. I'm sure there's nobody in our experience, in our world, in our communities that we can think of that would be in a similar situation. And so the Jews, the Hebrews, were being reminded to share the power that they had, to equalize the power distribution, to use their power in that setting to make sure that those without it were being cared for. It seems like Paul is reminding them, you belong. Use that sense of belonging to include others. You have food and shelter. Use them to care for those who don't. You are part of a community, and in that community, you experience safety. Welcome others into that community with kindness and generosity. Then he goes on to say, remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them, and those who are being tortured as though you yourself were being tortured. Talk about a power differential. People who are in prison as compared to those who are not, or those who are being tortured as compared to those who are not. I think he's part of what he's saying is don't take it for granted that you are free. Be aware and be grateful and use your freedom to show kindness to those who aren't. Use the power that comes with being not in prison, or in our case, the power that comes with being middle-aged and or white and or of Western descent and or heterosexual and or able-bodied and or able-minded. and or Christian and or upper middle class and or college educated and or a cisgender man and or U.S. citizens by birth. That's a lot of power. Let all of the power that comes with all of that remind you of all of those who are not all of those things, and especially of those who are not any of those things. And use that power to care for them, to lift them up, to work for their freedom and empowerment. Then he says, let marriage be held in honor by all, and let the marriage bed be kept undefiled. In those times, that represented an equalizing of power between men and women. He was saying, men, you can't just go do whatever you want. You and your wife need to honor each other, be both equal partners in that relationship, and hold it as sacred. That was unheard of in those times, and it's not necessarily a given today. Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. More money means more power, right? Those who have more of the former, who have more money, have more power. Who doesn't want more money? Who doesn't want more power? So he says, stay free from the love of money, because a love of money leads to greed, leads to selfishness, leads to looking out for number one, leads to an even greater distortion of power dynamics. There's no need, he says, to want more and more and more. Appreciate what you have. Be grateful for what you have. Be content with what you have so that you can share what you have. For God has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. And therein lies the source of our true power. God, and God being with us. God being faithful to us. God promising to never leave us. That's where our true power comes from, regardless of our age, race, sexual orientation, education, all of those things. Any true power that we ultimately have comes from God and God's presence with us. All of that other power, that world-given power, the power that the world perceives that we have, that power is at our disposal to equalize the power distribution in the world around us. That power is at our disposal to empower others. Our scripture from Hebrews this morning is an invitation, I think, to partner with Jesus in turning the world right side up. The world is upside down. It's going to take a lot of hands to turn it right side up. And we have a lot of power in the hands that we have, and we can do much to equalize that power distribution. And we have many opportunities to work with God, to partner with Jesus, to turn the world right side up. Amen.